Good morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Kuf Gimor and Kuf Beis Amid Beis. We're starting at the top of the Amid with the words Machula B'Marava. Machula B'Marava can be found about 10 lines on the top of the Amid. It's the last word in the line is Machachud. So they mocked and ridiculed. Mocking and ridiculing, generally speaking, is not the kind of thing that we want to engage in. However, they're trying to understand and they're trying to get to the truth. And so sometimes they're a little bit rough in the way they speak to one another, but okay. Anyway, that's aside from the basic point. What is the basic point? So here we are now in the ninth parak of Baba Kama, obviously continuation from yesterday's daf. And anos din maos lo shlucho. I give money to a person to go and make an investment for me. So in other words, venture capital. So I'm the investor. I go ahead and give money to somebody, and I want it to turn a profit. Okay, it's nice and simple, and this has been going now since since forever, and so I give him the money, and what does he do? So I tell him exactly how I want the investment to look like. In other words, here's our business strategy. Okay, very complicated. Buy wheat, buy it at a low price, turn it around and sell it at a higher price. Okay, good. So that is going to be our business model. It's a very simple and straightforward business model. But what happens is that he doesn't buy wheat, but rather he buys barley. Okay, so he made an executive decision, but he made it with my money. Okay, so what's the din? What's the halacha? So the brisos give us conflicting views in terms of what the halacha looks like. At the top of Kuf Beis Amud Beis, so you could see, so Tanya Chada, so we learned in one brisa, in Pachzu Peskulavi, Mosir Sirulo. Okay, so one brisa says that now the venture capitalist is going to get all the P and all the L, all profit, all losses. Why? So Rav Yochanan said, I'll tell you why. Because that's Rav Meir. In other words, that's just simply a reflection of the sheet of Rabbi Meir. In other words, what's Rav Meir going to tell you? When you're Mishana, You are deviating from the instructions that were given to you. You are kone b'shinui. That money now has become your money. In other words, what you did obviously is not right. Obviously, you should have been compliant and you should have been following instruction. And if you wanted to make change, you should have gone back to the investor and told them, here's what I think we should do. But in other words, but once you deviate from instructions, you are now being mishane, you're kone, and so now the money's your money. Okay. And therefore, you're going to be absorbing all the loss and you'll be gaining all the profit. Good. And obviously you have to make restitution on the money. Okay, that is Shitas Rebbe Meir. And the other brisa that says, well, if it's loss, you're going to suffer the loss. But if it's profit, you'll split the profit. That's Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. Good. That is Rebbe Yochanan's understanding of the brisa. Now, yesterday's daf, we went through Rebbe Lazar, who gave a different understanding of the brisa. But for our purposes today, just to simply go on in the Gemara from where we left off yesterday, all we need to do is just simply remind ourselves of the resolution, Rabbi Yochanan, which we just went over, and now that affords us the opportunity to go on. So we are on Kuf Beis Amud Beis with the words Machula B'Marava. So in Eretz Yisrael, as they're going over the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, so the Bnei HaYeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, so they're absorbing, and I'll say it bluntly, and they're mocking it. In other words, that pshat of Rabbi Yochanan, it's a ridiculous pshat. I know I'm speaking strongly right now. Obviously, I'm trying to communicate what the Gemara is saying. So the Rabbi Yochanan liba de Rabbi Yehuda, because consider the following. Rabbi Yochanan liba de Rabbi Yehuda, meaning what happens in brisa number two according to Rabbi Yochanan. In brisa number two, so I was given the money, the investor gave me the money, but the investor also gave me very clear instructions. Here's what I want you to buy. You're buying wheat. Okay, good. And what do? I now go out to the market and I make an executive decision on my own. I'm going to go buy barley. But I'm not using my money. I'm using somebody else's money. So I'm making a purchase for somebody else, and he didn't instruct me to do it. And the way Rabbi Yochanan presents it, well, Bryson number two was going like Rabbi Yehuda, and that really, if you're turning a profit, so you're splitting the profit. Because really what you're doing is you're acting as representative, an agent, as that of the investor. How in the world, I'm first going to say it out in English and then we'll see it inside in the Gemara. How in the world could you be serving as somebody's agent, making a purchase on his behalf, when you're buying something that he didn't instruct you to buy? That is the B'nai HaYeshiva and Eretz Yisrael think? That's ridiculous. You can't do that. Okay. V'chi mi yodi alabal chitim shikne chitim alabal ma'os. Ah, so the, so who's letting the seller know? So Maskel v'Rav Shmuel bar Sosarti ihachi afil chitim v'chitim namilo. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we say the same thing regarding wheat? But we all know the answer. Amar Rabbi Abahu shani chitim v'chitim d'shichuzai ka'avid v'chi balabai zami. So the Gemara says, look, if the instruction was to buy wheat and you bought wheat, you're a shliach. I'm not really following what was that give and take in the Gemara over there. It's something which we all knew and understood. But regardless, the Gemara is just spelling it out. If my instructions were to buy wheat and I bought wheat, I'm serving as a shliach. That's fine. So the Teda did not. And the Gemara now, the Gemara is going to just simply make this point that as long as I'm complying and compliant with the instructions that are given, so then I'm going to be acting as a shlich. How do I know that? Did not we have the following Mishnah? It's an erchin. Echad amakdish nechosav, echad amarichis atzmo. So ein lo b'ksus ishto v'lo b'ksus banav. So the Mishnah says that a person wants to be makdish all of his worldly possessions, feeling that he no longer has need on this earth for worldly possessions. They are just simply gashmias, taking me away from my service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So you know what? Just I'm giving it all to Hekdesh. So when you say you're giving everything of yours to Hekdesh, what's not included? Ksus ishto, ksus banav. Your wife's clothing, her closet, that's not included in your hakdasha. And neither are your children's clothing as well. Also, let's say you sent wool to the dyer to dye that wool on behalf of your wife. And so obviously now what's going to come back to you is wool with improved value. And same thing is true regarding shoes as well. So the amai le mahachinami mi odi alatzavishik netziva lo ishto. So the Gemara says, now, when you sent wool over to the dyer to dye on behalf of your wife. So the Gemara says, now, how exactly does that work? Elav mishum darmin d'shichusai ka'avidu v'uchiyad ishto dami. Hachinami shichusai ka'avidu chiyad balabayis dami. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how it works. It works via shlichus, meaning I'm serving as an agent of my wife. In other words, my wife's got clothing. She wants it dyed. So I'm taking it to the dyer. I'm telling the dyer, go ahead and dye it on behalf of my wife. There's going to be an improved value. That improved value now is going to be acquired to my wife. How is that working? It's working via shlichus. Okay. Amar Rabbi Abba lo. So Rabbi Abba says, nah, I don't think the Mishnah and Erechin is proof positive. Why? Because kol makdish nechasav ein dato al ksus yisho vanov. It could very well be that when you're makdish nechasav, you're simply not incorporating, you're not including the clothing of your wife and clothing of your children. In other words, it could just simply be a function of an ukimta, an umdana. In other words, generally speaking, so you want to part ways with that, with all your worldly possessions. That's great. But in other words, but generally speaking, you are not including your wife's clothing, your children's clothing. Maska for Rabbi Zer v'chidato shal adam al tefillah, al tefillah. So tana makdish nechaz of man lo tefillin. So the Gemara says, okay, but let me ask you a question. When you were makdish everything, so did you include your tefillin or did you not include your tefillin? Now, ostensibly, you didn't include your tefillin, and yet, what you're going to have to do in order to keep your tefillin is that you're going to have to give your children an appraisal of how much they're worth, and you're going to have to be poda. Why? Because they belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, wait one second. If we have this umdana that we're going to make assumptions of, there are certain things you're just not including. Isn't children included? So, and why do children need an appraisal? And why do you need to be poda? So, Amalei Abaye in Dato Shal Damal Tefillin Makdish Chasav Savra Mitzvah Kav Dinan Vein Dato Shal Damal Ksus V'Isha Avana Misham Eva. So the Gemara says, okay, here's part and parcel of the umdana. In other words, within the umdana, so what am I giving to the Beis HaMikdash? Also my tefillin. Why? I'm doing a mitzvah. Meaning what I'm doing is that I'm making a significant donation to the Beis HaMikdash. Of all my possessions, even my tefillin? Yeah, even my tefillin. In order for me to get back my tefillin, I'm going to have to do an appraisal and I'm going to have to redeem them. I'm going to have to be poda, even my tefillin. However, I'm definitely not going to be including my wife's closet. nor my children's closet. Why? Because we all know what's going to happen, right? Anyone with Baruch Hashem, with experience of marriage is going to know what's going to happen. I'm going to make decisions regarding my wife's clothing. So the Gemara says, Eva, it'll lead to animosity, it'll lead to acrimony. No, thank you, but no thank you. So in other words, as far as the Umdin is concerned, so a person will have in mind to be makdish all of his own possessions, even his tefillin, but not his wife's clothing and not his children's clothing as well. Okay, so maskel for Rabbi Shiva lo chay ve'erchin shanukan and utanan chay ve'erchin mashkeno so v'chidato shal adam alatzmo lemashkeno. So the Gemara says, okay, but including the Mishnah is not just being makdish but also being marich. Marich is making an erchin pledge. Okay, if you have no background with erchin, so I apologize a little bit only because I'm just not going to spend a lot of time explaining what an erch vow is versus regular hakdasha. Anyway, I'll just assume we all know. If I make an erchin pledge, and so what happens with an erchin pledge? A knock on the door, a trustee of the Beis HaMikdash is going to come in, the Gizbar is going to come in, and he's going to be mimashkein. In other words, I now owe money to the Beis HaMikdash because of my erich vow. They're going to start coming and I'll take that. In other words, collateral against the obligation that I owe. Now that's aggressive. I know, we all know it's aggressive, but the Gizbar has that kind of authority and that kind of ability. Great. Now, the Gemara now wants to know, I'm just rereading that last phrase. V'chidatu shel adam al atzmo lemashkeno? Now, is a person going to put himself in that kind of position? Meaning, we're trying to figure out the umdana of what people are going to do and what people are not going to do. What is their thought process? People really want that? So, El Amar Rabbi Abba, Kol HaMakdish Nechas of Nasa Kemi Shehikna Lehem Ksus Ishto Uvanav Mi'ikara. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. Okay, so that when you're Makdish your Nechas of, so effectively you're going to be doing the following. Meaning, why is it that your wife's clothing is not included? So, up until now, we were trying to make an argument that it's Umdana. In other words, there are certain things which I will want to keep in and certain things I want to exclude. And it's going to be based on Umdana. But Umdana is very hard because Umdana requires mind reading. And as the Gemara just acknowledged, mind reading is tricky. In other words, we're trying to figure out what Mistama he wants in and what Mistama he wants out.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Okay.
But there's things in.
Sorry about that.
I have to give some things away. You want me to be more than
okay. Oh. Good. Technology. Okay, good. But what we're.
Depends how much you can get.
Yeah, but what so we can't do it based on umdana. So Rabbi Abba now is going to give a new approach, and the new approach Rabbi Abba is kol hamakdish nechas of nasa kemishehikna lehem ksus ishto uvanav miikara. Now, so what we're going to be doing is the following, and that is, look, I'm about to make a very sizable donation to the Beis HaMikdash. I say sizable, I mean everything. Okay, how are you going to live after this? By the way, I have to admit it's going to be a challenge, but okay. I'm about to be makdish all my worldly possessions to the Beis HaMikdash. Here's what I'm going to do. What I'm going to do is that I'm going to make sure that it's only going to be my material goods. It won't be my wife's and it won't be my children's. Even though I have bailus on them, even though I have ownership of them. But what I'm going to do is that I'm going to make a kinyan. I'm going to be makne their possessions to them. I could do that. And now, basically, what I do is I am removing my ownership of those items. As a result of that, now, when I go ahead and be makdish all my possessions, so that will exclude, by definition, the ksus ishto, ksus banim. That is how it is going to work. Okay. All this, meaning make yourself impoverished?
Yeah.
No. No. It's such a good question. It really is a good question. The Mishnayos and Erchin are just dealing with what is included and what's not included. But to put yourself in a position of that kind of need, Alan, your point is excellent. A person should not put himself in that kind of position. In fact, the Gemara tells us that when you're giving tzedakah, don't give more than a fifth. Meaning, give at least 10%, but don't give more than a fifth. And the general explanation is because you want to still maintain wealth for yourself. In other words, you need to support yourself. Okay, so your point's excellent, but okay, notwithstanding. Okay, where are we right now? So the B'nai Ma'arav. B'nai Marava are really bothered. In other words, let's reset our discussion. We got off on this tangent because of Erchin and the Mishnayos and Erchin, but now let's reset our discussion. The B'nai Marava are bothered. Why? Because I have an investor and I have somebody now who's more than happy to take the money and capitalize on that money. Okay, but over here, the relationship started off like this. The investor said, here's my money. I want you to go to the market, buy wheat. Buy low, sell high. Great. And we're going to split profits. Oh, brilliant business model. Love it. Okay, good. Now what happened was is that he went to the market and he made an executive decision, and that is that he decided we're buying barley. So I'm using somebody else's money, and I'm going to purchase something which I wasn't authorized to purchase. Good. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, as understood by Rabbi Yochanan, what's the din? The din is we're going to share profit. Now, if there's loss, that's going to be on you. Why? Because you deviated. But if there's going to be profit, we're going to share profit. Why? Because it's my money. And so the B'nai Marava were struggling. I don't understand. How does that purchase even work? How can you take somebody else's money and make a purchase of something that he didn't authorize you to purchase? That can't work. That's the Machachu Aleh B'Marava in Eretz Yisrael. When they heard such a pshat, they lost their mind. Right? How can you do that? Okay, so Tanu Rabbanan. We're still on Kuf Beis Amud Beis, and we are working our way towards the bottom. We are the second wide line. Tanu Rabbanan Alkech Sada B'Shem Chaveru In Kofen Oso Limkor V'Imamar Lo Amanas Kofen Oso Limkor. So what do? I purchase a field, B'Shem Chaveru, and I don't use my name, I use my friend's name. Okay. So I'm going to make a purchase of a field, and now when writing up the contract, and who's the buyer? So I write over here, Alan Berger. Even though I'm buying the property. Now, that's a little bit strange. On the other hand, however, happens to be, who's going to mess with Alan Berger? In other words, so on one hand...
I will.
Right? Yeah, good luck. So on one hand, it's a little bit strange. I'm not using my name. On the other hand, I'm going to provide somewhat of an explanation in terms of why I'm going to do it. What's the din? So the Bryce over here, not super clear. I'll read it again. So in the first part of the Bryce, it says that we can't force them to sell, meaning that the contract reads Alan Berger. So who's the buyer? Alan Berger. I'm the one who wrote it. Ein kofen oso limkor. We don't force Alan to sell it. However, imam lo amanas kofen oso limkor. But if it's understood conditionally, so then we do force them to sell. Great. I read the Bryce. At this point in time, no expectation that we're understanding, because that's exactly what the Gemara is going to do right now. Help us understand. My Kamar. Good. What does the Braisa mean? I'm Rav Sheshet Hachi, Kamar Lokech Sada Mechaver B'Shem Reish Galusa. So over here, so what I do is that I purchase a field and I use the name Reish Galusa. Now you talk about somebody with political clout and importance. Oh, Reish Galusa. So I'm buying the field, and I write Reish Galusa's name. So Ein Kofen Oso Reish Galusa Limkor. So if I didn't go over to the Reish Galusa before and then say, hey, look, I'm going to use your name. Can I have your permission? You didn't do that. You just decided I'm going to use Reish Galusa's name. So what we don't do is we don't force them to sell. Imam Ramanas.
To write another deed.
Right, correct. Correct. Reish Galusa is not going to force me, and I can't force Reish Galusa to write another title so that I now become the purchaser of that property. Please wait. Let's first get our head wrapped around the Braisa, and then afterwards we'll see if we can understand even better. Imamar Amanas. If on the other hand he said Amanas, and it was understood that this is conditional. Sorry, I lost my spot. Amanas. So Kofenes Reish Galusa Limkor. So then we are going to force. Okay. So if this was understood that I'm going to put Reish Galusa's name on, but only afterwards, what we're going to do now is that we're going to write up a new title, and then he's going to go ahead and sell it to me. So then, obviously, once they agree to it, so then we're going to force them to go ahead and to write up a new contract. Okay. Amar Mar. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me see if I can wrap my head around what we just learned together. We just learned together that I went ahead and, without going to the Reish Galusa and without asking permission, So I go ahead and I make a purchase. But instead of using my name, I use the Reish Galusa's name. So what's the halacha we just learned together? The property belongs to the Reish Galusa, and because I didn't consult with him first, now what he has no obligation to do is to write another title, writing over the property from him to me. But what it sounds like, however, is that the kinyan works. Now, the Bnei Ma'arava, who were mocking Rav Yochanan, presumably they would say, how in the world could the kinyan work? I can make a purchase on behalf of somebody else without consulting with him? Are you kidding? Say it even stronger. Are you crazy? In other words, how can I make a purchase on behalf of somebody else without consulting with them? And we're talking about the purchasing of a property. And I'm going to write the Reish Galusa's name on the bottom, and I'm not consulting, and therefore he doesn't have to write title for me? Before we get to that point, meaning, how does a sale even go through if I'm not buying it myself and I'm buying on behalf of somebody else without consultation? That's crazy.
Well, no, but hold on.
Alan just gave the answer. In other words, it's not zachon la'adam shelo b'fanav. In other words, with property comes a lot of obligation.
You have taxes, you have other issues, you have responsibilities.
Okay, good, good.
Still, he comes out ahead.
Yes, but okay, so you have to ask somebody before you put them in an obligation.
Right.
Situation.
Correct, good. So, imishum halokasha kegon de odila balsa de odila sahadei. Okay, the Gemara says like this. Okay, so the case under review over here, so in other words, the Bnei Ma'arava would as much as they mocked Rav Yochanan, they would mock this interpretation of the Braisa. Okay, so far so good. So the Gemara says, okay, Kagon Daudila Balsa Devodila Sahade. So the Gemara says what's happening over here in this particular Braisa, in this particular discussion, is that what the buyer did is the buyer let everybody know. He let the owner know and he let the witnesses know. So in other words, what happens is as follows: is that he said to the owner and he said to the witnesses, "Look, here's what we're going to do. I'm buying the property, but in other words, what I'm worried about is that I'm worried about somebody coming ahead and taking advantage of me if they see my name now on the title. So what I'm going to do over here is that I'm not going to write my name on the title. I'm going to write the Reish Galusa's name on the title. No one's going to mess with the Reish Galusa. But in other words, but understand, however, that I'm really doing the purchase." So you're letting everybody know. Now, of course, by the way, I already anticipate the next question, which is that's terribly disingenuous, meaning that you are misrepresenting who the buyer is in order to put yourself in a better position. Now, ultimately, by the way, this can come and really burn you, as we already know what the conclusion is. The conclusion is that if you do that and you didn't ask permission from the Reish Galusa, so then he doesn't have to go ahead and write a new contract for you. But that's what the Bryce is talking about, where you let everybody know what you're trying to do.
So the seller has to write a new
contract. Correct. Ela ima seifa. So the Gemara says, Amana as kofinosa loy karcha beina velo zilusacha beina. Now, if it's amanas, so then I don't understand. You said amanas, but you put it down as part of the condition of the sale. Part of the condition of the sale is I'm putting the Reish Galusa in, but amanas that we're going to go ahead and write a new star at some future date. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Let the Reish Galusa say, lo yikar chabina velo zilusai chabina. In other words, who cares that you conditioned with the seller? In other words, the Reish Galusa could just simply say, I'm very happy that you made all this negotiation and deal between buyer and seller. Now, what do you want me to do? You want me to go ahead and turn around and write you a new note? Thank you, but no thank you. Elam Rabbi Hachi Kamar. So finally the Gemara says, okay, let's scrap everything we just said in terms of understanding of the Braisa. That wasn't the right pshat in the Braisa, or at least according to Abaye, let's offer a new pshat in the Braisa altogether. And that is a halokech sadeh b'shem chavero. He's buying it for himself. He's using his friend's name. So so ein kofen es hamocher limkor zimna achriti. What we're not going to do is that we're not going to force the seller to go ahead and to write up a new contract. So the imam lo amanas kofen oso hamocher limkor. But if he says amanah, so then we're going to be kofem. What is that? What does that mean? Not writing a new sale. Look at the top Rashi over here. In kofem as amokah lachzav lichtav shtar mechira acher lilokeach Shaya lo lahasno, so lo dia, kasav shtari b'shem reish galusa, shim yatsu asikin, ara lahem shuhu shav reish galusa. The kasav li shtar acher b'shmi, shalo yavo ayam olamacher yorshe reish galusa letovim mimeni. Basically, what I want over here is the following, and that is that I'm really buying it for myself, but what I want you to do is I want you to write me two contracts. One, the first one with the Reish Galusa name, and the second one with my name. So in other words, if you didn't negotiate that at the beginning, so then they don't have to write a second contract. If you negotiated that at the beginning, so then he has to write you a second contract. So Amar, so on that the Gemara says, the alokech sadeh b'shem chaverin kofen az mocha limkor zimne achrita pshita ma'u detema mati amale medi adadan in laf shishakina. U pan chaya ba'ama hu dekabeina. So bechdi lo shadina el adaita dekasav lishtar achrita. So kamash malan. So the Gemara says now, what would have been the havamina? The havamina would have been is that this is well understood. Meaning that when he knows that you're buying it for yourself, and he knows right now that you're using the Reish Galusa name as just as a way of scaring other people away. In other words, you have predatory lenders and a whole assortment of people who are going to pounce on you knowing that you're the buyer. And so maybe it's well understood that that's what you're trying to do. And so what the Gemara says is that I might have thought that he, the seller, understood that as well. And so therefore, even without a amanas, even without condition, a stated condition that we're going to write up a second contract as well. So then he's going to write it anyway. In other words, he should write it anyway because it was understood. So the amale in yana avdelach b'hadehu dezavdan tele bishmei. So v'yichtav lo shtar achrina. The mocher, the seller, can just simply turn around and say. So the in other words, it could very well be that this is something that you negotiated together with the Reish Galusa. Meaning, how do I know definitively that you were buying it for yourself? Meaning, you said to put the Reish Galusa name on it. I don't know. Maybe you negotiated together with the Reish Galusa. Maybe you are buying on his behalf. In other words, if we don't state it explicitly with an amanas, with a clear condition at the beginning, that I'm going to be writing you, I'm going to be selling you the property, I'm going to be writing you two title, one with the Reish Galusa name on it, but again, just to scare off other people. And then I'm going to write you a second one with your name on it. If we don't state that at the onset, up front, then I could have thought maybe you were buying it on behalf of the Reish Galusa. So Pshita, the Gemara says, now, if we stipulate that as a condition, look, here's what I want to do. I want to buy the property from you. And we're going to agree that you're going to be writing me two contracts. So the first one with the Reish Galusa name on it, and the second one with my name on it. And we all agree, and we all said amanas, we're good. So pshita lo tricha da amr lehu lasadi kami, I'm sorry, da amr lehu lasadi kami didei, chazu d'shtar achrina kabi'inan. So ma'u d'teima ma'zi amr lehi, amin ashtari mehach d'kasha kalta b'shmei kamart. So kamash malan, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what might not have been so obvious, and that is that the seller can turn around to the buyer and said, I know we agreed that there was going to be a second title that was written. Who's to say that? I was going to write the second title? I don't know. In other words, you put the Reish Galusa's name down as the buyer. I thought that the second title was going to be written by the Reish Galusa. Right? In other words, maybe, as a Havamina, maybe the communication was not super clear. And maybe that second title was, in fact, expected to be written by the Reish Galusa. At least that's what the seller is arguing right now. So what the Chiddush is that when the buyer says to the seller, look, here are the witnesses, and here's what I want, and the condition I'm stipulating is that you're going to be writing me two contracts. So in other words, once we say that in front of the witnesses right over here, so kamash malan.
Rabbi, can I ask a question, just technically?
Yeah.
To understand this better, are we talking about the contract or the bill of sale, or are we actually talking about the transfer of the document?
We're talking more about the transfer. Good. We're talking more about...
Because there's a distinctive difference. The contract has to have the buyer's acknowledgement.
Right.
If you put in somebody else's name, they have to agree and they have to sign it.
Right, right.
Where just the transfer of deed,
right.
You can transfer the deed to anybody's name.
Right, okay.
and they don't have to sign it. Only the seller has to sign it.
Fine, so, fine. I think it's more the latter. I think it's more of the actual deed. I don't know. It's something I've always wondered, and we're going to get to Baba Basra. We're going to speak so much about it. I don't know back in the day if they had this distinction of contract versus
so
title.
Yeah, so you pay the money, and here they right, give you a deed, right, and that's the end of it.
I think so.
So how can you sell it twice?
You're not selling it twice. In other words, the first contract was just there to basically strengthen your position. In other words, by not putting your name down and putting somebody much more powerful than you on it, you were just trying to protect yourself in doing so. And as long as you stipulated with the seller that this is what we're doing. Now, again, by the way, I am in the back of my head as I'm trying to present the Gemara, I'm absolutely worried and concerned about the fact that it is disingenuous.
Yeah.
Right.
You can sell a car.
Right.
So you have a title.
Right.
You can sell it twice.
But the seller can sign it and not put the buyer's name, and then you can sell it to him, and he can sell it to him, and right, then eventually the last person. But the title is the control and power of the property.
Right. Right. It is representation of ownership. Absolutely. Okay, good. We are in Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we just concluded a lengthy discussion in the Gemara regarding a person's ability to go ahead and to make a purchase using somebody else's money without their authorization. And the B'nai Ma'arava, which the Gemara never really, in other words, it's hard to argue the point. It's really hard. The B'nai Ma'arava say you can't do that. You simply can't do that. You can't be operating with somebody else's money. And if you're operating as a shliach, so that shlichus works, but only when you are compliant with instruction. Once you go rogue, and once you make executive decisions of what you're going to be purchasing using other people's money, so then, it presumably shouldn't work. That's the B'nai Ma'arava, and what the Gemara has been doing since that B'nai Ma'arava made that point, which seems to be such a salient point, is that the Gemara has been pushing back on that. But at the same time, however, when all said and done, we have so far defended their position. Now, by the way, in other words, the counter argument to that could be, we'll throw out one last point over here. The counter argument could be simply that, in other words, investment is different. In other words, when I give somebody money to invest, now, again, I'm saying this, by the way, but my heart's not really into it, but I'll say it anyway. If I'm giving money for somebody to invest, And we agree that we're going to buy wheat, but then now he goes to the market and he finds a much better buying opportunity with barley. So maybe you could say that, well, look, I'm not interested in wheat versus barley. I'm interested in money. I'm just an investor who wants a good return. So I want a good ROI. So it could very well be that maybe the shliach. Does have a little bit more latitude of what he can purchase. Now, I say that, but my heart's not into it, because if my instructions were to buy wheat, so then now to make the argument of that he's got latitude, I don't know. I said it, but my heart's not into it. Okay. Rav Kahana Yav Zusa Kitna. Lesovi Yakar Kitna. Zavne Marvasa Dikisna. Okay, so we have the following now scenario. This last topic over here that's going to take us to the upcoming Mishnah is going to be concerned with a couple of possible ribbis issues. Rav Kahana gave money to somebody in order to buy flax. And and Lesofi Yakar Kisna. And now what happened is that after the money was given, so the price of flax now went up. So Zabne Marvasna de Kisna. So the, now what he did, let's try to be very clear. So now the seller of the flax, in other words, remember, Rav Kahana now is the buyer. So what the seller of the flax now did is that the seller went ahead and sold the flax. So the and to give the money over to Rav Kahana. So also coming to Rav Amar Le Ma'avid. So now Rav Kahana goes to Rav and says, Ezel Eshkol Zuzay. In other words, now what am I supposed to do now? Am I supposed to take the money? So and what's that issue over here? Consider, okay. Let's say I went ahead and right, let's say I'm Rav Kahana. I went ahead and I gave money $100 in order to buy flax. Good. So I gave him $100. Now I didn't take the actual flax. Obviously, probably would have been the best move. But in other words, I gave him $100, and now I purchased the flax. So now what he does is that he turns around and he sells my flax. Now again, by the way, he sells it without my authorization. That's why this Gemara over here is here. But okay, but he sold it.
But there's no kin. You haven't done the kinyan yet.
I haven't done the kinyan yet. Now he comes back to me and he says, look, price of flax went up tremendously. In other words, that $100 of flax that you purchased, so I sold it for $200. Okay, just to make this exciting. And so now, you know, look, in other words, you already paid me for the flax. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you back your money. But I'm not going to give you $100 because, again, you purchased the flax. I sold the flax. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn around and I'm now going to give you $200. So this is great for Rav Kahana, but Rav Kahana was worried. What just happened over here? Let's look at that transaction. I gave $100. I got $200 back from another Jew. Now, granted, by the way, this was not a loan. In other words, I didn't give him $100 so that he'd pay me back $200. This was a purchase. I gave $100 to purchase flax. It just happens to be the price of flax went up. And now when he sold it, he's just simply returning me now the value of that flax that doubled in value. But when all said and done, it looks like ribbis. That's why Rav Kahana turns to his Rebbe Rav and says, what do I do? So Amrle, Iki Kazavni Amri Hai Kisna de Kahanu Zilshkol, the Ilo Lozishkol. So the Gemara says, okay, so the answer to this question, says Rav, is going to be depending on how my flax guy sold the flax. When he went out to the market, he said, I'm selling Kahana's flax. Oh, okay, fine. So in other words, so go ahead, pocket the $200. In other words, there you don't have to worry about appearances whatsoever. Because even from an appearance standpoint, when he went to the market and he was selling, he told everyone he's selling your flax. So come on. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Meaning, let's once again return back to the B'nai Ma'arava. Now, the B'nai Ma'arava says is that if you do not have authorization to go ahead and to purchase, so with other people's money, so you can't do so. So the Gemara says, so over here, so according to the B'nai Ma'arava, so can my guy do this? Can he go ahead now and take Kahana's flax and sell them in the market? Meaning Kahana already paid for the flax, but did Kahana give the authorization, the ability to go ahead, turn around now and sell that in the market? So the Gemara says, in other words, Rav Kahana gave 4 and took back 8. And other, right, there was no authorization to do so. V'kidna mimeluhu diyakir. So migzal gazluha. So the utanan kol gazlan mishamim kishasik zela. In other words, when my flax seller, when my flax seller sold my flax, again, I'm going to pretend like I'm Rav Kahana. When he went in and sold my flax, he did so without my authorization. So when you're taking something of mine and selling it without my authorization, we got words to describe that person. It's called the Goslin. Okay, good. And now as a Goslin, so what do? You pay kishas hagzela. So in other words, we're going to go back to the time in which he was a Goslin. So in other words, and at that point in time, what was the value of the flax at that point in time? In other words, it was back at the original price. Amrei, hasa mamana havei v'lo mashkei Rav Kahana l'kisna. So the Gemara says, okay. The Gemara says, this is a situation of Amana. Now, this is a Gemara in Bamitzia. Osin Amana Litain Maus Al Hashar Shal Zol Shal Achshav. What you are allowed to do is the following, and that is that you're allowed to give money to make a purchase on fruit based on its current price. If subsequently it were to go up in price, and right, correct. If it were to go up in price and now you're going to be able to sell it on the future price, so you're allowed to do amana al peros. What you're not allowed to do is amana al hamaos. Now,
he could actually be liable for damages because if Kahana bought it with the intent of holding on to it,
right,
and there's a shortage of flax and that price keeps going up, and he sold it to make a profit, but there's... He left a lot of profit on the table because it keeps going up.
Correct.
Maybe he caused damages. Could he be responsible for that damages, doing it without asking?
Beautiful. I don't know. Beautiful. I don't know. Ain't no sin amana bedamim, but what you can't do is you can't do amana bedamim. Rashi. In other words, what you can't do is that you can't basically swap money using the value of fruit as going to be your marker of what the value of money is going to be. In other words, you can't fix any kind of exchange of money on the value of fruit, meaning that it's not really I'm purchasing fruit with the opportunity to go ahead and sell the fruit at a later point in time. And whatever the increased value of the fruit is, I get to collect that money, meaning that you're allowed to do. In other words, a futures market, that you're allowed to do. But to go ahead now and exchange money, fixing it to the value of fruit, so that you can't do, because that will look like ribbis. Effectively, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to get $4, but I'm going to get back $8, which, by the way, if I understood the futures market better, in other words, I'm not sure where the future markets is more comparable to, the amana ala peres or the amana ala damim, right? Rav says the former you're allowed to do, the latter you're not allowed to do. Good.
One has no risk. If you fix the value,
right,
there's no downside.
Okay.
Where if you're buying the futures and the market drops,
right,
you can lose money.
Very, very good. Very good. And that would explain the distinction between the two cases, right, meaning why amana ala peres you're allowed to do, because, in other words, unlike lending, there's no risk.
Right.
Correct. Very good. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of our first part of today's daf. And so, really, the entire discussion all revolved around B'nai Marava. B'nai Marava says is that when you're operating with other people's money, and he gave instructions what you do, and you deviate from those instructions, and you go ahead and you make a purchase, you are not entitled to do so. You are not authorized to do so. Right, even though Rav Yochanan suggested that that would be possible, the B'nai Marav and the Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, they said, it's just simply not a tenable position. And what the Gemara did, since their comment goes back to yesterday's daf, and Kuf Beis Amid Beis, since their comment, what the Gemara did is defended, attacked, in other words, discussed this position of the B'nai Marav. We're in Kuf Gimel Amid Aleph, we're at the bottom, we're at the Mishnah. Let's go through the Mishnah. And let's go through a little bit of the Gemara. We're in good pace, but let's make sure we stay in good pace. I say that, but let me give just a short introduction. The Torah talks about a situation in which you stole money. Now, when I say steal money, by the way, didn't have to be stealing. It could have been just simply that I retained somebody's money that did not belong to me. I had a worker work for me, and I owe him. And I decided that, you know what, I'm not going to pay my worker. Okay. So I have money that doesn't belong to me. And now we're confronted with that person. So what do? I make a shvua. And I say, look, I swear I don't have your money. Okay, so I took somebody's money or I retained somebody's money. And then compounding the error, now I even made an oath to that regard. Okay. After a couple sleepless nights, I finally go to the basin and I say, okay, chatati. I'm totally in the wrong. The money belongs to him, and I swore falsely, and the Torah says, under those circumstances, so here's what you're going to do. Here are the consequences of what's going to happen. And that is, so, v'shilam asa b'roshav v'chamishi sav yosif alav la'asher hulo yignenu b'yam ashmasav. So what you're going to do now is that, number one, you're going to pay back the principal of that which you stole or that which you retained. That's number one. Number two is that you're going to be adding a chamish. Now, a chamish is a fifth, but it's 25%. Okay, and now if you've been with me for a long time, you know that in the Torah, a chomish is 25%. How does the math work? I'll give you a math lesson on another occasion. Not now when I'm trying to get through the daf. Now, and then on top of that, you also have to bring a karban. Karban asham. Okay. And the asham over here from this point going forward is going to be called an asham gezela. Right? See how that works? Right, it's for stealing. But again, though, it's a little bit misleading. By the way, in other words, this karban asham is not for every gzela. This karban asham is specifically for the gzela in which you stole, confronted, swore that you didn't steal it, and then made an admission that you swore falsely. If you have that scenario, then you have this karban asham. Okay, what we're going to be focusing on today is a detail which may end up not being such a small little detail. And let me just go back and reread and reemphasize a part of the pasuk that I just ran over, and that is v'shilam asar b'roshav v'chamishiso yosef alav. You pay principal, you pay a fifth, and la'asher hu lo. And that person over there, you're going to give him the money. Yitnenu. You have to hand it to him.
Biyom
Ashmaso. Okay, good. Alan already figured out exactly what I'm trying to emphasize. Okay, he is totally locked in. The Mishnah. Hagozu Chaver Shavar Put the Mishnah Lo Yolichenu Acharav Lamadai. So now I gotta make good. I gotta make good on the fact that I stole somebody's money, retained somebody's money, and I swore. And now I gotta go ahead and I gotta return it. I gotta return it to him. Where's this guy right now? He's out in Madai. Now we don't know geography right now, but obviously Madai is not here. Okay.
He's fighting.
Madai is out there. Oh wait, 1 second. I owe this guy $100. You mean to tell me that I need to go ahead and make a purchase of a ticket, and that ticket's going to be $1,000. Also, that I have to return it. Well, welcome to tshuva. Okay. In other words, if you want to do right and you want to do good, that's exactly what you need to do. Yolichenu acharav lamadai. Right. This happens to be a pretty popular expression of the Mishnah over here, meaning even if you have to chase him out to Madai, that's what you're going to have to do. You can't give it to a son. You can't give it to a shliach. Avanosan l'shliach beizdin. Now you do have one out, and that is that you can give it to beizdin as a takana to help people do tshuva. Beis Din will set up offices, or should I say better, Beis Din will set up Beis Din so that you can give the money to Beis Din. That is one out that you have, but it's the only out that you have. The imei yachzir liyorshav. Now, if the person dies, if the victim dies, you can give it to his yorshim. Nasan lo zekem v'lo nasan lo zechamish machalo alakem v'lo machalo alachamish machalo zevi alzechus mipachus mishavet pruta b'keren. If I owe him even just a pruta of keren, I have to go chase him down to Madai. But if I owe him zero keren, and let's say the chomesh, I'm delinquent on the chomesh, I don't have to chase him down to Madai. Obviously, I still owe him the chomesh, but I don't have to chase him down to Madai. This idea of chasing him down to Madai is only on principle. Einu tzarech leilech acharav. I'm sorry, einu tzarech leilech acharav. Nasan lo ze chomesh v'lo nasan lo ze keren. Machalo ala chomesh v'lo machalo ala keren. Machalo al zeh v'al zeh chutz mishav v'prut b'keren tzarech leilech acharav. If there's any amount, I know the Mishnah over here is a little verbose. If there's any amount of keren that I owe, when I say any, I mean significant. It has to be a prutah's worth of keren. If there's at least a prutah's worth of keren that I owe, I gotta go all the way to Madai. Now, so lo zekeren v'nishba lo lechomesh. If I gave him keren, and what did I do with the following? Okay, so I paid him back the principal. Good. I'm a little bit delinquent right now. I owe chomesh. I owe him 25%. Okay. But it's a chomesh, meaning that's just a tack on. And you know what? All right. Unfortunately, bad habits are hard to break. They are. So over here, what do I do with that chomesh? I wake up one morning and I say to him, you know what? I don't owe you the chomesh. Okay. Now, I know it's funny, by the way. In other words, it's not nice to laugh at, you know, look, bad habits are hard to break. In other words, how did you get into this mess? Because you swore falsely. Okay. Now that you owe the chomesh, and even though you already paid your keren, you owe the chomesh, and now, basically, instead of paying chomesh, I'll just swear that I don't know it, or I paid it already. So nishma lo the chomesh. So last day you make a shvua on the chomesh. So now, as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, I remember shalom chomesh al chomesh. So in other words, now what you're going to have to do is the following: you're going to owe chomesh on the chomesh, meaning because the chomesh is a real obligation. And I know it's funny because in the Mishnah we just learned together, I don't have to schlep out to Madai in order to return the chomesh. Yeah, but in other words, you don't have to pay travel expenses. But you owe it. And now it's an obligation that you owe. And now that you swear that you don't owe it, so now it's going to go ahead and create a derivative secondary chomesh now on this chomesh that you denied. And Ashimais Karen Mishava Pruta. And this can go on and on until eventually, you know, the chomesh obviously is going to get smaller and smaller. That's how fractions work. So eventually what's going to happen is that whatever derivative chomesh now becomes less than a shavapruta, and now you will not be obligated simply because it's not a significant amount. V'chein b'pikadon, and the same thing, by the way, this is not limited to gzela. Also includes a pikadon shenamar, b'pikadon, o b'tsumas yad, that's a loan, o b'gezel, that's theft, o ashak es amiso, that's wages, o matzah aveda v'kicheshba, or you find somebody's lost item. And v'nishbal sheker. And what you do is that you swear falsely. And you said, nah, I don't have it. Or, the right, it's not in my possession. Harizim Hashem, Karen v'chomesh. the asham. So now you have Karen, you have Chumash, and you also have the asham payment that you have to pay. Okay. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with the Gemara and Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon. Who is our Mishnah following? Like three rounds. Okay, all to be done tomorrow. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to an end. Okay, the most of our daf today dedicated to the topic of can I use somebody else's money? The investor gave me money with instructions of what to do with the money. Can I go ahead now and make any kind of executive decisions? B'nai Marava says under no circumstances can you do that. The sale is not a sale. And what we did over the course of this morning is discuss what about purchasing property using somebody else's name, where the Braisa said that when it's Almanas, you can do so. How does that even work? So the Gemara had to navigate that discussion. Discussions of when I gave money to my flax grower, and I purchased flax, and he then turned around and sold my flax. How was he authorized to do that? V'chule, v'chule. So we have a couple of examples where it sounded like it can be done, but when all said and done, the Gemara really defends it. B'nai Marava, you cannot do it. You cannot go ahead and unauthorized go ahead and sell somebody else's property or purchase on behalf of somebody if in fact you were not authorized to do so and you're not acting as a shliach. The second part of today's daf, we started the Mishnah regarding you put yourself in a situation of you were nishbal sheker, you falsely swore about somebody else's money, saying that you don't owe the obligation. And now, after being modest, what do you have to do? You have to pay Karen Chomish and Asham, and we just learned a new din together in today's daf, and that is that travel expenses. In order to properly do tshuva, you have to go and return the money to wherever he is. He's a Madai. Enjoy your trip to Madai. Okay, and we'll talk more about that in tomorrow's daf.